thank you very much, Eric. Our next speaker, his name's Matt Geiger, and I'm a little hesitant to invite him to our conferences because everybody says, Colin, you're so young, and look what you're doing, and Matt's like 2 years younger than me and richer than me. And Matt is the owner of MJG Fund, Capital Fund, which is a resource fund. He also has a tech startup that he started 3 or 4 years ago, which has a $100 million plus valuation. So he's kind of in two different, very unusual spaces at the same time, but they're both extremely speculative in nature. And so I always like to get his opinion, being in the tech space, which he feels maybe is frothy right now, and then being involved in the resource space. So anyway, without further ado, Matt, please come up.
Hello, everyone. A lot of familiar faces here. It's good to be back at a Palisade conference. Appreciate it, Colin, Sean, putting this together. Before I get booed off the stage here, I wanted to put a slight caveat onto that. The presentation is entitled Why I Hate Gold, But Still Invest in Gold Juniors. I will say that in today's environment, with low interest rates, we're awash in liquidity. Gold does look pretty good relative to most other asset classes, real estate, cryptocurrencies, tech across the world, US stock market, bond market, et cetera. That said, relative to the rest of the metal complex, I really do have a distaste for gold and prefer the metals that ultimately allow us to live our globalized, highly technological 21st century lifestyle. Here we go. So demand, and in my opinion, for gold, it comes from two of the most base primal human emotions, vanity and fear. Vanity. So 50% of gold demand comes from jewelry. And this is really focused on China and India. Between those two countries, 65% of jewelry demand is found between the two of them. India actually is about 10% more than China, at least as of Q2 2017. A lot of people will say we're seeing the rise of the middle class in Chindia. Of course, that's going to result in more jewelry being purchased, etc. I would say there is some correlation there, but if you're moving into the middle class, the very first thing you do is not going to be to buy a gold watch or a necklace for your wife. You want a metal roof over your head. You want a car or a bike that can take you to and from work. You want electric appliances. You want a smartphone to be able to connect with the world. So for me, this is not an area that gets me too excited in terms of jewelry demand for gold. 40% of gold is also going into safes and vaults. This is kind of amongst three different areas. The first would be individual investor demand for gold coins and bars. The second would be central bank demand in order to diversify and buy gold. And then the third is ETFs. Ultimately, we do see a world awash in liquidity. We're not seeing this demand, both from, central bank, we're seeing that to some demand. ETF is picking up. But again, this is stuff that's just going to sit in the ground. It doesn't help us live our 21st century lifestyle, and it's really the fear aspect of it, which I do not appreciate. Consumer. So gold is actually a very useful metal. It's the most conductive, even more so than silver. If the price was maybe 1/50th of where it is today, or equal to silver, there'd be no reason to use silver in anything. But the fact is, at these current gold prices, you're really priced out from using gold in anything industrial. And that's kind of what gets me excited. So there is use in the medical field. There is use for purification and other things. But for now, gold, unless it dramatically declines in price, will not have major industrial applications. And that is not interesting to me. Here we go. So I will say, there's two negatives right there. I don't like the fact that the vast majority of gold demand stems from both vanity and fear, which is the investment side of things. And then I also don't like the standpoint that gold is not used for positive, global growth and kind of this 21st century lifestyle we're seeing. There's another aspect of gold that doesn't get me excited here. And this is a really interesting chart. So this is all metal exploration expenditures globally in terms of so far this year. And you'll see that 51% of all exploration expenditures is going towards gold, more so than all other metals combined. This is pretty interesting here. That means a lot of money and, of course, brain power is going towards finding this metal, which to me doesn't help us live the way that we do. And, you know, it's pretty surprising. Again, all other metals combined, everything else that's used from an industrial capacity is dwarfed exclusively by gold. You'll also see, I was recently chatting with John Kaiser. He covers a universe of about 2,000 juniors. He says that 1,000 of those juniors are focused specifically on gold, and then an additional, you know, 300 to 400 have gold as one of their target metals. And so this is a really sought after space. That said, when you look at the actual value, and this is, I apologize for this being a little bit outdated, but you see the total value of all metals pulled out of the ground in 2015 was about $715 billion. Now, gold, as you can see here, was the second most valuable, or the largest industry, except for iron ore, at about $110 billion there. But as you can see, that's only 15% of the total value. So we're basically spending 51% of our resources, 51% of our brain power as an industry, chasing after something that really only provides 15% of the value of the whole metal complex. To me, this seems to be a misallocation of resources, both from a business and a societal perspective, considering that gold, again, doesn't provide much to society at the moment, except for reassurance in the face of collapse and calamity, and of course the vanity aspect that I discussed. So I've covered a few of the reasons here why I'm not a fan of the actual physical metal. That said, there is some nuance to this talk, and gold still comprises about 20% of our portfolio. So we don't invest in physical metals, we invest in juniors. And about 20% of our weighted portfolio is exposed to gold. And the reason for that is opportunity. So, you know, one of the axioms and the beliefs that I have is the larger the universe, the more opportunity there is to find value there. And there are a few anecdotes. I mean, Warren Buffett famously said that if he was still able to invest in small cap stocks, he'd be able to make 50% returns on an annual basis. Why can't he do that anymore? Well, he's been priced out. He's been so successful that it no longer makes sense for him to put money into smaller cap stocks. He has to focus on a smaller universe. A lot of these other stocks are more well followed and covered, and there's just not quite the opportunity there. Additionally, another anecdote here, if any of you guys read Joel Greenblatt's book, The Little Blue Book That Beat the Market, he has a magic formula, he calls it, and it basically just is a 50-50 weighting between, you look at enterprise yield of companies, and then also return on invested capital, and do a 50-50 blend there. And if you apply that formula to just the mega caps and the large caps, you do see outperformance. But if you apply that to the entire universe over time, all equities going down to small and micro caps, you'll massively outperform. And so again, one of the reasons I'm attracted to gold is that there are 1,000, 1,200 juniors out there. And if you pick through them on a bottom-up basis, you can find value and pretty exciting opportunities. So some of the opportunities I like on an absolute basis, these are Ben Graham-esque opportunities. And a key metric here that you can look at is net working cap relative to fully diluted market cap. One of the very best investments we made was Almadex Minerals. We put money into that company in Q4 2015 when it was literally trading at the value of its cash, marketable securities, and it had $2 million in bullion. It's like an $8 million market cap. Great management team behind it, but obviously absolutely no love. That was at the very depths of the bear market that we've just experienced. That company proceeded to go up 10x. We actually exited the stock at around $1.60. It went up to $2. Now it's come back to $1.30. It's still an interesting opportunity, but right there, that is just pure classic value investing. And to me, that got me really excited. And you know, if you look at the gold complex right now, you know, I can name 5 or 10 stocks off the top of my head right now, trading at or below the value of its net working capital. You know, Golden Valley Mines, Minco Gold, DGR Global, Chalice, Batero, Elise Development Corp. There are quite a few out there. And I challenge any of you guys, I'd appreciate it actually, if you can find a silver, a uranium, a nickel story that's trading at or below the value of its working capital, I will give you $100, and it'll probably be in my portfolio next week as well. And so, because this universe is so large, there are diamonds in the rough that are overlooked, and that's something that attracts me to the space. Additionally, relative value. So I am a fan of the junior royalty companies. Generally, and these are all rough numbers, it depends on the market environment, you'll see the big boys, the Francos, Wheaton Precious Metals, Royal Gold, Sandstorms, generally trading at a 20 to 24x multiple price to cash flow. And there's a very interesting arbitrage opportunity with some of these smaller royalty companies that will trade, you know, between 6 to 10x. I actually think this is perverse, and I haven't heard many people talk about this, but for people that do know the junior royalty space, there's greater opportunity to grow there. If you're a Franco or one of the really big boys, you're priced out of a lot of deals that could have very high IRRs, but won't move the needle to you because you already have market caps in the billions of dollars. So it's much easier to grow and really create value as a smaller junior royalty company. And generally, if you follow the stock market, even if you just look at price to earnings, what companies get the higher multiples? Is it the safer, more established ones, or is it the ones with higher opportunity for growth? It's generally the ones with the higher opportunity for growth. So I think you could justify for some of these smaller companies, as long as they're well managed, and that's obviously a key caveat across the space, that the multiple should be equal or maybe even larger than some of the bigger guys, just by virtue that they have opportunities to take advantage of that the bigger guys are priced out of. So to me, whether it's the EMXs of the world, the Golden Valleys, Metallas, there's exciting opportunity from a junior perspective. So here's the paradox. Gold is one of my least favorite metals for the reasons I went through earlier. Again, we're investors in juniors and equities and not the underlying metals. So as a bottom-up investor, I am attracted to value on a company-specific level. Because of the sheer quantity of gold juniors out there, I'm a big believer in Pareto's law. Generally, the top 20% will create 80% of the value. And if you superimpose that on each other, top 4% will produce 64% of the value in any industry. So generally, as an investor, I think it's smart to try to look at 20 opportunities for every one that you end up picking and putting into your portfolio. You can hardly even find 20 uranium companies out there at current, whereas gold, you could build an entire portfolio by looking over all 1,000 juniors and pick the top 40 to 50 if you see opportunity there. And so this is why, even though I don't like the underlying metal, there are some companies out there that are so compelling on a bottom-up basis that we do have gold at around 18% of our overall portfolio. So I spent time bashing gold here to some degree, but I did want to talk about some of the metals that get me excited as an investor. Basically, I try to capitalize on these macro trends and focus on those areas and then look from a bottom-up perspective once I've kind of isolated the certain universes. So there's four trends that get me really excited. First is power generation without CO2. So you're seeing this across the world, almost as a political necessity, especially in places like China. Big believer in nuclear, solar, photovoltaic, wind turbines, and all the associated storage that will come with that. Higher value diets as the world becomes wealthier and freer, and I'm still of the belief that we're seeing that on a global basis, even though there's been spotty over the past 10 years. People move to higher value foodstuffs, more protein, which obviously, as you guys know, there's about 10x, you have to put 10x the amount of calories into your steak, into your pork, in order to actually get that. So there's a lot of waste that goes along with that. So that's another theme that gets me excited. A third here is the EV revolution, and really the death of the internal combustion engine and drivers going forward here in terms of batteries and such. And then explosion of the Internet of Things. And this is the concept that basically everything out there is going to have a computer going forward here, a mini computer inside. That's relevant because there's circuit boards, displays, you need transistors for connectivity, you need batteries in order to power. And so this all results in the 21st century metals that get me excited as an investor. So silver is definitely up there at the top of the list. You guys may know 55 to 60% of silver actually goes into industrial uses. Relevant for PV solar panels from the power generation standpoint. Relevant for water purification, which can fit into the higher value diets thesis. And also with electric cars, you haven't heard too much discussion about this recently, but I think the dialogue will pick up. There's actually 10x more silver used in EV vehicles versus internal combustion engines. So there's opportunity right there. Uranium falls into the power generation standpoint. That's obviously a very long-term play, but I am a big believer in nuclear power going forward. That's obviously one of the most contrarian spaces of the resource market right now. Copper, that fits into the power generation thesis with copper wiring. It fits into the EV revolution theme, where you have about 4 to 5x more copper being used in electric vehicles relative to the internal combustion engines. Rare earth metals are relevant, and that's been a place, you know, a space that's been absolutely loathed since 2011, 2012. But there's excitement there in terms of power generation. Wind turbines, especially the heavier rare earths, are highly necessary there for the high-powered magnets. It's important for the EV revolution as well. While Tesla does not use high-power magnets in their engines, a lot of these other electric vehicle manufacturers are building that in. And there's talks that Tesla might actually do that as well. And then the explosion of the Internet of Things. You have rare earths going into displays, into the circuit boards, into batteries, basically across the board. So there's opportunity there. And then this wouldn't technically qualify as a metal, more of a material, but the phosphates of the world. And any sort of potassium that has low salinity is going to be really exciting here in the upcoming years. This is another area that's been absolutely beaten down in the market, but there's contrarian opportunity there similar to the uranium space, in my opinion. All right, so here's our portfolio at current. A couple points. Again, these are all equities. We don't own any physical metals. So obviously, we get to take advantage of the leverage on the upside, but it's a double-edged sword, of course, on the downside, too. Gold, you can see, is about 18% on a weighted basis. Currently, I really need to up both our uranium and phosphate exposure. Nickel is a metal that I'm really, really bullish on. Both nickel and manganese, I struggled whether I should include those in the industrial metal or the energy metal section. I do think of them as energy metals personally, but right now about 85 to 90% of manganese is put into steel as an alloying agent. About 65% of nickel is still used as an alloying agent. However, I think in the next 4 to 5 years, we'll see the majority of nickel start being used in batteries and some of these higher value applications. So I'll probably bump that up into the energy metal section. I do think there's a lot of opportunity here amongst the metals with industrial use. And of course, that's just a bias of mine as an investor. But you know, I have extreme conviction over these next decades that if you're in the middle of these industries that allow us to live our globalized, highly technological, 21st century style of life, these are the metals to be involved with. And again, gold fits into the portfolio not because I get too excited about the underlying metal, but because the universe is so large, there are these bottom-up opportunities that we've taken advantage of. Any questions? Yep.
What do you see on the scandium metal applications and just the overall market for pricing?
Yeah, so I mean that's a that's a very controversial metal. You hear a lot of respected analysts out there calling it scamium and completely steering clear. That said, Friedland is a big bull of the metal, and I would not recommend anybody ever betting against Friedland. We own Scandium International, which is kind of our only pure play scandium holding there. The ex-CEO of Rio Tinto recently participated in the last placement. So there are some pretty high quality people out there. Scandium demand, scandium's used in solid oxide fuel cells. I'm actually not as excited about that going forward. That is an energy application. The real excitement with scandium is it's used as an alloying agent with aluminum. And it can be used to make metals lighter, stronger, and much easier to manufacture. So scandium is an expensive metal. So part of the important thing for the industry to do is to be able to produce at a cost where you can basically economically dope aluminum metals and give it those extra attributes without totally throwing off the price. So I'm a fan. We also get, if you don't want to do a pure play bet like Scandium International, you can also get exposure by buying some of these nickel cobalt laterite plays that have scandium as a byproduct. So I know Cleantech is looking at that and producing scandium as a byproduct. We own Ardea Resources, who have never focused on scandium, but just recently they're going to start incorporating that into their mine plan and into their economics. Yep. That's a good question. I mean, these are very long-term trends, and as we know, the junior resource space is extremely cyclical. I'm of the opinion that things actually are pretty damn cheap right here in terms of across the resource space, whether you're looking at the precious metals, the base metals, the battery metals. We went through a really painful culling period between 2011 right through the end of 2015. I think the bottom was reached in January 2016. I think we're about a year and a half into a bull market. The fact that it hasn't been straight up, obviously a lot of precious metal investors made a lot of money from Jan 2016 up through late summer of that year. Things have pulled back to some degree, but to a degree that makes me believe it's consolidation versus another leg down in the bear market. So, you know, my opinion is you want to play these themes, but not when everybody else is thinking about it. And to me, if you look at the front pages, nobody's talking about these themes, even though they are very real. The way we're going to play this is we're basically 100% exposed to juniors right now. We've got 20 to 25 different holdings. I think this cycle is, you know, based off of how we've seen it come off the bottom, is going to be maybe equal in length to what we saw at the bear market. So it's kind of a 3 to 5 year time horizon. So I think now is the time to get aggressive. Our plan is to be about 100% exposed to juniors through mid-2018. Then in a linear fashion, we're gonna take about 60% of our chips off the table by mid-2019, let the remaining 40% of the portfolio that remains in metals ride for the rest of the bull market, forever long that lasts, and then put the remaining 60% into resource investments that fit our thesis, but aren't necessarily correlated to the mining cycle. So that could be forestry, agriculture, water rights, dairy, aquaculture, et cetera. I mean, I think it's all on an individual basis. So if you want to talk about cobalt specifically, there's really four different ways to play it. You could go to the DRC for the tier one deposits. You could go for Canada for the brownfield past producing mines. You can go for these optionality plays, the large nickel laterite deposits that may not be in the money right now, but certainly would at $60 cobalt and higher nickel prices. You can also own the physical metal yourself. So we're a smaller fund, so I'm not priced out of anything yet. That'll be a good problem to have further down the line. But yeah, we're acting pretty aggressively, but it depends on the metals and the certain industries. Yeah, so platinum's a tough one. I mean, on a relative standpoint, compared to gold, it actually does look pretty attractive right now. But we're steering clear of that space. I think the demand picture is hazy at best. It really depends on electric vehicle adoption. But there's a pretty phenomenal chart. I'm sure half of this room has seen it already, but it's put out by UBS recently, assuming pretty, somewhat conservative adoption rates. And we could lose over the next year potentially 50% of platinum and palladium demand. As you guys know, about 90% of platinum and palladium goes into catalytic converters, which are put in internal combustion engines to reduce pollution and reduce the emissions that come out of the car. If we're moving to electric vehicles, to my knowledge, there's not an ounce of platinum or palladium put into these EVs. And that could be a pretty nasty disruption for the industry. That said, you do want to look at bottom-up opportunities. If that's the general consensus and people absolutely poo-poo the space, if you can get involved in platinum and palladium plays that are trading very close to the value of their working capital and you kind of get free upside with very limited downside, there may be opportunity there. But I don't view those metals as fitting into the themes that I mentioned. Yep.
Why have you left out graphite? They need 20 times more graphite than lithium for batteries.
Yeah, graphite's a tough one. I also didn't discuss lithium for a couple reasons. The main concept is I just don't think there's as much opportunity there. There are graphite companies are a dime a dozen right now, as is the lithium space. As you guys know, for lithium, I think there's 50 different North American juniors listed and close to 70 in Australia. So it's really a rush into the space. I also view graphite as potentially more of an industrial play. It's not clear to me whether the graphite being put into electric vehicles will be natural or synthetic. That to me is still being decided. I think the industry is still grappling with that right now. So yes, there are individual graphite opportunities. I know there are some stocks doing quite well right now, like SRG Graphite, for instance. But that's a space that I don't have quite the conviction in. And I think you can get the same exposure and upside with the cobalts and the nickels of the world.
How does someone bet on you?
Well, to me, I'm trying to take the long view here. All investors that put money into the partnership have a 10-year lockup. So obviously it's tougher to raise funds. But starting young, and I own 30% of the partnership myself, I'm focused purely on returns right now and really performance and building relationships, going out and meeting the right people, meeting the right management teams where decade after decade I can continue to put money to work right now. So the fund is open-ended. We are taking investments. But for me, I'm not here to try to promote and get new investors. It's more to find opportunities and build relationships for the longer term. Any questions anymore? We're good to go? Thanks, guys.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?